Hello and welcome to the Pinsent Mason's Insurance Matters podcast in association with the Sunday Business Post. I'm Peter O'Dwyer, business correspondent with the Sunday Business Post, and I'm joined by two great guests here today to discuss Brexit and what it's all going to mean for the Irish insurance sector. First up, we have Hamid Akhtar, head of corporate insurance at Pinsent Mason's, and he's joined by Nisha Hartnett, corporate insurance partner at Pinsent Mason's in Dublin. Welcome to you both, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We're here, of course, in the Pinsent Mason's Dublin office on Windmill Lane, which is the site of some very famous recordings from the likes of U2, most notably. So, you know, no pressure today. The bar hasn't been set high for us. This will all go swimmingly, I'm sure.
Big shoes to fill.
Exactly. We're here because there has just been a Brexit briefing, obviously, that we've had a little while ago and the impact that it's going to have on the insurance sector. And Hamid, if I start with you, one of the points that you made during that discussion was that clients were now coming to you with what I think you termed a second tier of issues, whereby firms might have prepared for Brexit, but not necessarily for a no-deal Brexit. Can you just elaborate on what you meant by that and the types of issues that they're coming to you with?
Sure. So, as I mentioned earlier on, since the Brexit referendum back in 2016, we've advised a number of UK, Irish and other insurers and reinsurers on their Brexit strategies and the implementation. A lot of that restructuring activity that's taken place to date was in contemplation of Brexit happening at the end of March and also in contemplation of a soft Brexit involving a transitional period. Since the threat of a no-deal Brexit has become real, we've seen another wave of activity in the market. So lots of insurance groups, both UK and Irish, are now looking a bit more critically at even at the Brexit planning that they've undertaken, and are looking at other parts of their business to understand how a no-deal Brexit will impact on their business. So the sorts of issues that we've been grappling with for our clients are quite broad-ranging. So they've included questions around the UK regulatory perimeter, and whether, if you're an Irish insurer and you have some operations or some connection with the UK market, is that regulated activity from a UK perspective? And what will happen in a post-Brexit market? Do they need to be authorised in the UK post-hard Brexit? So that's been one particular area of focus, understandably. We've also done quite a lot of work, both for insurers and reinsurers, helping them understand what the implications of a no-deal Brexit might be on existing contracts. And so one example of that has been in the context of reinsurance, where there's been some concern under existing reinsurance contracts whether they may actually result in a breach of contract or a termination of rent under a reinsurance contract as a result of a hard Brexit. And you can see how these things might play out. So you could have a termination event in a reinsurance agreement or another type of agreement, which effectively might be linked to the authorization of a party to carry on business in the UK. The loss of passporting rights may mean that they don't have authorization, so results in a technical breach under the contract. So that's just some of the issues that we've been grappling with for our clients.
Mm-hmm. Nisha, the Central Bank of Ireland has said on numerous occasions, including this morning again, that some insurers still aren't prepared for Brexit. Given that we're more than 3 years on from the referendum, does that surprise you?
Yes and no, to be honest with you. You're right, there has been, you know, what you consider to be ample time to get your contingency arrangements in place, particularly if you're a UK insurer writing business in the EU. But we are seeing real world examples of entities coming to us, you know, that have written Irish risk or EEA risk, and they don't have a solution to the loss of passporting rights. So I think the Central Bank have been quite clear that they're not going to have a situation where there's customer detriment arising from it. So it's clear that those contracts will have to be honoured. The Central Bank and the Irish state have also put in place a temporary runoff regime whereby there'll be a 3-year period when entities can run off existing contracts, although they can't write new business in Ireland. So that's another period of time that entities who haven't put contingency arrangements in place will have to hopefully run off the business or potentially transfer it. 3 years, obviously, though, isn't a long enough period for life insurance and also long tail non-life business. So there might still be entities at the end of that 3-year period who essentially don't have the required authorization to write that business. And we definitely think there's some issues there in terms of existing insurers who haven't taken arrangements to cater for that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that 3-year period. It does seem quite short given the nature of insurance. Can you elaborate on what sort of impact you might see when we get towards the end of that period?
Yeah, I suppose a little bit of background on that, I suppose, compared to the UK regime, for example, the runoff regime under the financial services contracts regime in the UK is 15 years and the Irish regime is 3 years. Now, the Irish regime isn't as long as some of the other EEA temporary regimes have been put in place, but it's actually longer than some jurisdictions, and some jurisdictions don't have one at all. And the thinking behind the 3 year period is it gives enough time, and we believe the central bank thinking on this is it gives enough time to either run off or transfer the business off your balance sheet onto an entity that does have an authorization. So that's the final period, I suppose, that the central bank are giving to resolve those issues. The period isn't longer in a way, it's kind of a political kind of overplay to it. The feeling was if you go beyond 3 years, you're getting into the future trading arrangements between the EU member states and the UK, and Ireland couldn't be seen to be stepping out of that and going beyond into that sort of territory. And, you know, it links to some of the pressure points that would have come from Michel Barnier on those sorts of things. But there will be some insurers that probably won't be able to transfer certain small books of business. And, you know, maybe there might be some that aren't particularly attractive to another entity in the market, and they simply can't transfer them, and the policyholders might be willing to surrender them. So we do think there will be situations where entities don't have an authorization at the end of the 3 years. And it isn't justified by the size of the books they have in Ireland to look for one. And there could be issues there.
I think in some ways it's not surprising that the industry isn't fully ready. You know, looking at it from the perspective of an insurance company or reinsurance company facing Brexit 3 years ago, there was a lot of uncertainty about Brexit. Will it happen? If it does happen, what form will it happen in? Will it be hard Brexit? Will it be soft? Will there be a transitional period? What will the UK's relationship be with Ireland going forwards? What will it be with the rest of the European Union? And against that background, it's been really difficult, I think, for the industry to prepare. And I think a lot of the activity that we've seen in preparation of Brexit is dealing with the obvious and the big problems. But where, for example, if you're a UK insurance company and you've got 20 policyholders with a current address in Ireland, you know, are you really going to expend the time, the money, the resource to deal with that 20 policyholders? Because I don't think it's an unreasonable assumption for that insurance company to make that there will be a political, a regulatory, a legal solution to allow them to continue to service and administer those policies. So I think the industry has been pragmatic and appropriately pragmatic. The challenge really has been about this great threat about a no-deal Brexit. And in a sense, it's put a challenge on that pragmatism and really forced insurers and reinsurers to look at their businesses and say, well, whilst we've done a lot, actually, we've got to worry about even those little pockets of policyholders or particular issues in particular jurisdictions. And I think that's really challenging. It's like any business, you've got to make some sort of cost-benefit analysis about what to do. And it's very hard to do that when you don't know what the future political landscape is going to be.
And you mentioned earlier that even of the firms who have prepared probably quite comprehensively, that even they are just requiring that extra clarity before they can progress their preparations even further. Is that clarity that will only be delivered when Brexit of some shape or form comes to pass, or could it be done before that happens?
I think there was an opportunity to give clarity much earlier on in this wider Brexit process. I feel that that's been a missed opportunity for not just for the insurance industry, but actually for business generally. And that, in many ways, I think has been a political failing more than anything else. I think looking forwards, I would hope that there'll be greater clarity if and when Brexit does happen. I fear, and my expectation is, that actually full clarity will not really be forthcoming for a period of time thereafter. Because even if we do end up being, let's say we have a withdrawal agreement and there's a transitional period, or even if there's a no-deal Brexit, in either of those scenarios, what's not going to be sorted out at this point in time is what the future relationship is between the UK and other member states. And that ultimately is going to be the heart of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Nisha, are there particular elements for the reinsurance sector that we should be looking at? It's probably an area that gets a little less coverage when we talk about Brexit.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, Ireland and Dublin will be a leading reinsurance jurisdiction. So these are points that are particularly relevant to us. I think there's a few points that come to mind, but probably the one to focus on is the extent to which the UK regulatory regime has given Solvency II equivalence. So there's a ruling essentially that the UK regulatory regime post-Brexit is equivalent to Solvency II. And there's benefits to that because the UK will then not be treated as a third country for Solvency II purposes. Now, if the UK does get an equivalence ruling, and we do think it will, the regimes are very similar, but there will be a time lag before that happens. It's not going to happen immediately upon Brexit taking place. The Bermudan, Japanese and Swiss equivalence rulings took over 5 years to get. We don't think it'll be that long, but there's also a political piece here around how swiftly that process moves. Now, if the UK don't get equivalence immediately, certain Irish cedents that have reinsured their business to UK reinsurers potentially might have to collateralize that reinsurance to get credit for it if the credit rating of the UK insurer doesn't meet a certain standard. So that's one potential knock-on effect. I suppose on the flip side then, looking at the Irish reinsurance industry, there might be some short to medium opportunities there for the Irish reinsurance industry. If the UK reinsurance industry doesn't get equivalence immediately, there might be some short-term gains there for Ireland.
Mm-hmm. It's probably, if I just may just add to that, it's probably just worth bearing in mind a lot of the preparation that we've seen undertaken by the insurance industry applies equally to the reinsurance industry as well. So the reinsurance industry has not been complacent over the last 3 years. I think that there's been a lot of preparation undertaken, and indeed we've been involved in some of it. But as Nisha says, I think there are particular issues for reinsurers and additional challenges for them. And a lot of the focus, I think, from a regulatory perspective has been on direct insurance, understandably, because that's what interfaces with the consumer, the policyholder. But for reinsurers, they have difficult paths to navigate through too.
Agreed. And I think one feature of the Irish reinsurance industry would be that a lot of the reinsurance written out of Dublin would be done under English law, and there would be the jurisdiction of the UK courts to decide potential litigation on those contracts. So there's particular features of the Irish reinsurance industry which are impacted by Brexit.
Talking more broadly again about both the insurance and reinsurance markets, if we focus just on the very short term, and if we assume that there will be a no-deal Brexit, even though that's obviously an assumption that perhaps we shouldn't make it this far out, what are the immediate consequences for the Irish sector that we're going to have to grapple with in those initial couple of months?
Yeah, I think the view we've always had here is that if you have a no-deal Brexit as distinct from a withdrawal agreement plus a transitional period, the fundamental legal impacts don't change massively. That's always been our thinking since the Lancaster House speech, when Theresa May made it clear that the UK will be coming out of the single market and customs union irrespective of whether we had a withdrawal agreement or not. That meant UK insurers would lose passporting rights into the EU, and Irish insurers and reinsurers would lose passporting rights into the UK. But beyond those passporting and single market access points, there's a number of other issues which would come to the fore. And the thing about a no-deal Brexit is it front loads the necessity to deal with all of those. You have to deal with them in a much shorter time period. And the kinds of issues that we would see as being relevant there would be things around the limitations of the temporary runoff regimes and permission regimes that we just discussed there, delay in the equivalency ruling for the UK regulatory regime as against Solvency II, enforcements of judgments between Ireland and the UK or the EU and the UK, particular issues around GDPR and the fact that the UK will be a third country for GDPR purposes, transfers of personal data to the UK post-Brexit will create issues. And then there's also some potential limitations and restrictions on the ability to transfer books of insurance business between the EU and the UK and vice versa post-Brexit. And those are things that are relevant to Irish insurers and reinsurers, and also UK ones, and even those that have engaged in Brexit contingency projects and potentially have got a new authorisation in Ireland or elsewhere in the EU.
I think in addition to those, the legal and regulatory impacts, which Nisha's just mentioned, you know, there's a wide expectation if we had a no-deal Brexit that there would be market disruption, market volatility. And I think for any business, including insurance and reinsurance, that market volatility will bring challenges. You know, some insurers will hold their assets denominated in pounds, in British pounds. You could see the pound being massively devalued. That may bring capital challenges for insurance groups. There'll be other, I think, related challenges which tie into kind of market volatility, impact on pricing, for example, for insurance companies. You know, we mentioned earlier on in our seminar, you could see for certain types of insurance business. I gave the example of motor insurers, where if you're a UK motor insurer and you're paying out for cars to be repaired, and fairly quickly there's tariffs on car parts, actually your cost base increases quite significantly. Supplies, meaning getting supplies through, may take longer. So that market disruption, that business disruption, could actually have quite a significant impact on the industry, and ultimately could impact on consumers as well. Driving up prices is just an obvious impact.
Mm-hmm. The Central Bank have confirmed relatively recently that I think 16 UK or Gibraltar-based insurers will be leaving post-Brexit. They have confirmed that to the Central Bank. Notwithstanding, obviously, the three-year runoff that will deal with existing business here, what sort of impact do you expect that to have on the insurance market and the reduction in capacity that will accompany that?
Yeah, and it's an interesting point, and it's not something that really there's been huge amount of focus on in Ireland. We've always been looking at the business that will be coming in as opposed to the business that will be leaving. And I think my sense of that is, obviously a reduction in capacity in the Irish market is not a good thing. We have particular features in the Irish insurance market where we need increased competition in certain lines of business. But I think where some of the pinch points, or certainly the commentary has been where there'd be certain pinch points, might be in certain kind of niche types of cover and niche types of markets. So I think one of the things I heard about was, scuba diving companies and things like that, not being able to, childcare and creches, not being able to get specific types of cover, which traditionally would have been written out of the London market. And I think those types of niche lines of business where there isn't a justification for expending on a new authorization, or potentially, engaging in a transfer of your business if it's long tail, that's where those issues seem to be. It's the niche lines of business where there just isn't the scale and the economies of scale that justify undertaking some of these Brexit projects. So I think those would be the type of areas where you'd expect to see the significant reductions in capacity, which will ultimately impact Irish businesses.
And it's not a legal point, obviously, but that reduction in capacity, is that inevitably bound to affect pricing in the market then?
One would assume so. I think in the cases that I've been hearing about, again, back to your childcare and creche cover, or even, that scuba diving company by way of example, it's either an extreme rise in prices and insurance premiums, or in certain extreme circumstances, even there mightn't just be cover available. And that's the difficulty. Like, some of these real speciality covers that would traditionally be written in the London market just aren't replicated here. So you're either talking about a real reduction in the amount of options you will have for your cover, or in certain circumstances, it just might not be available.
If you believe in market forces, you would expect that the market would adjust.
Yep.
And if there continues to be demand for those types of cover, that someone else will ultimately provide it.
But is it a case perhaps that the Irish market is too small for those sort of niche activities that Nisha mentions?
Perhaps. I mean, those examples that Nisha gave are quite niche. Clearly, for any insurance business, they've got to tally up whether it's worth economically, from a profitability perspective, worth providing particular lines of cover. And if the demand is there, I'd expect someone would provide it.
What opportunities do you see for the Irish sector, and have they been largely realised already in the 3 years that we've had?
I think there's a number of opportunities. Looking at the reinsurance market, there's potential opportunities in the short to medium term if the UK reinsurance industry doesn't get equivalence. Potentially, the Irish reinsurance might pick up more business than it otherwise would. An obvious one would be books of business, which traditionally would have been transferred to undertakings in the UK market, will now go to EU jurisdictions, one would have thought, and Ireland will be well placed to pick those up. We have a number of aggregators in the Irish market who would be operating in that space and potentially could benefit from profitable books of business being transferred to them rather than to UK entities. I think from an Irish market perspective, we've done well from Brexit. We've got a lot of authorizations, possibly not as many as we would have hoped for in certain lines, particularly I'm thinking of some of the non-life general insurance spaces. but no one other European capital or jurisdiction has established itself as a main front runner to counter London in terms of the insurance industry. So yes, we mightn't have got as many authorizations as we would have hoped for, but we have still done well and we're well positioned going forward as an insurance hub within Europe. We haven't lost out to one particular jurisdiction or one particular place which has really established itself. So that's kind of a macro point, I think, that we have done well on.
And why do you think we have gotten fewer authorizations than we might have expected?
I think there's a number of factors at play there. So I think the CBI have followed the EIOPA guidelines quite closely in terms of substance. And there was a real effort by the Central Bank of Ireland to ensure that we weren't having brass plate type authorizations here. So they're very keen to have substance and people on the ground in Ireland. So the heart and mind of the entity is in Ireland, as opposed to still being remaining in the UK. Certain other jurisdictions might have been a little bit more aggressive with that. It remains to be seen whether going forward they actually have to come back towards the recommended position from EIOPA. But the central bank essentially were towing the line that's the way it should be done, and they adhere to that, whereas other jurisdictions maybe didn't. But we have done well. I think the bigger picture is we have got a lot of good authorizations, and that still happens. And even if there haven't been authorizations, there's been a lot of portfolio transfer activity into Ireland to existing balance sheets. So overall, it's a positive picture.
What is the opinion of the Central Bank of Ireland among the clients that you would have advised? Obviously not asking you to comment specifically, but just in general, do you have a sense of what the feeling is towards the regulator here?
I do. I mean, I've over the course of my career, over the last 20 years or so, I've worked on a number of transactions which have involved Irish reinsurers and insurance companies. And so I've worked with the Irish regulator on a number of transactions over that period. And I think it's fair to say that the CBI, the Central Bank of Ireland, is very well respected as a regulator. I think part of the appeal, as Nisha mentions, that Ireland has done well out of Brexit is because actually the value of having a robust financial services regulator with proper regulation and appropriate controls is seen as appealing. And certainly, you know, on the Brexit-related reorganisations that we've advised on, which have seen business coming out of UK carriers into Ireland carriers, part of the appeal of Ireland has been the robust regulatory framework and the approach of the CBI. So, you know, I know there's over times regulators can often be criticised for being too robust and too severe, but actually I think that has played in Ireland's favour. And, you know, the PRA and the FCA sometimes get a tough write-up, you know, amongst their European regulators. But actually, I think the central bank has played it well. And I think the positions that they've taken and their robust regulatory framework has served the Irish industry really well.
Yeah. And I think the particular points that were relevant in some of those authorization discussions were things like the amount of reinsurance back to the United Kingdom, which could apply in the structure. And again, the substance, the amount of people who would need to move to Ireland. And the central bank were clear on their positions on those from the start and stayed consistent with them. And again, building on Hamad's points, they have that reputation of being a strong regulator on those points, and that remains to be seen whether other jurisdictions maybe have to roll back to what EIOPA have recommended on those points, which is essentially the Central Bank of Ireland position.
Do you think the Brexit situation and the Central Bank's approach to it has actually rehabilitated the regulator's reputation from where it was a decade or so ago?
I do. And I think that was probably part of the thinking in terms of the approach that the Irish regulator was keen to re-establish itself and rehabilitate itself and come from the position it was in 2008. What I would say is the 2008 position didn't involve the insurance industry or the reinsurance industry, but there's no doubt that the central bank, you know, are still quite conscious of that. So I definitely think that was part of the approach. Another relevant factor in that was that language which had been in the old Central Bank Acts, which place a requirement on the central bank to promote the jurisdiction, was actually stripped out of the legislation after the 2008 financial crisis. So that role was gone, and essentially the central bank's job is to regulate appropriately and prudently. So that's what it was doing in the course of the Brexit authorization process. It wasn't going out to promote the jurisdiction as a venue, because that wasn't in its job spec, essentially. Mm-hmm.
Finally, you did a quick straw poll at the event earlier in terms of who expected a no-deal Brexit, both by the end of October and by the end of the year. And out of an audience of approximately 60, three expected by the end of this month, and a further three by the end of the year. So only about 1 in 10. What's your own opinion, Hamid, as to the likelihood of an no deal Brexit either by the end of the month or the end of the year?
Well, that's the $1 million question, isn't it? It's, certainly if you read the sound bites that come through from the UK government, it seems highly likely that there will be a no deal Brexit by the end of this month, the end of October. My personal view is that is unlikely. I don't think we will see a no deal Brexit by the end of October. And the principal reason for that is, I think there's the other main political parties in the UK have made their position very clear that they are against the no deal Brexit. And I think the momentum, I hope, will swing in favour of that. As far as no deal Brexit by the end of January, well, a lot happens in Brexit world, doesn't it? I mentioned earlier on that as far as Brexit is concerned, we feel like we know a lot, but actually we know very little. So let's see what happens over the next few months. I would like to think that there is enough momentum both from the EU and from the UK to reach some form of deal, whether that's during the course of this month, as the UK government seems to be pushing, or by the end of January. I'd hope that we will, if Brexit is to go ahead, that it's a Brexit involving a withdrawal agreement and it's a Brexit involving a transitional period. That's where I'd like to see the UK end up, and it would be good for the insurance and reinsurance industry if that was the case.
Any thoughts, Nisha?
Yeah, I'd echo that. I think from an Irish insurance industry perspective and from Pinsent Mason's perspective, we obviously operate in both jurisdictions, Ireland and the UK. So our preference would obviously be for a withdrawal agreement with a transitional period. I think ultimately looking at it in from the outside, from Ireland, it's so hard to call. I think we had a corresponding seminar in London where we were discussing this, and we had a UK politician come in and talk to us, and about the only certainty we had was that there will be a general election in the UK, and ultimately it's going to come down to the arithmetic in the House of Commons, I think, as to whether we can break the deadlock here. I don't see the Conservatives making enough gains in the north of England. They're going to lose seats in Scotland and the south, you would have thought. So it's difficult to see how a no-deal Brexit might get through even in new parliaments. So that maybe means we're in the same logjam position unless we can come to some sort of an agreement. So again, we would hope that there would be an agreement. But my last point today at the seminar was we could be back this time next year talking about Brexit again. Who knows?
Clear as mud, so.
Exactly. Okay. We like that as lawyers.
We'll finish on that note. I'd like to thank my two guests again for their time. Nisha Hartnett, Corporate Insurance Partner at Pinsent Masons in Dublin, and Hamid Akhtar, Pinsent Masons Head of Corporate Insurance. My name is Peter O'Dwyer. You can find me at Peter O'Dwyer 1 on Twitter. Pinsent Masons is @Pinsent_Masons. And to keep abreast of Brexit and all matters insurance, you can follow the Sunday Business Post by searching for the handle @Sunday Business. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.